I will go around and say hello to people. And as was true to the tradition before lockdown, when I say somebody's name, everybody repeats their name. So you can learn their names. Now, you're welcome to do that on Zoom, as long as you're muted. And then the Zendo is probably not going to help you all that much because I can hardly see the people, but there it is. I will start with Yashin Tsoki. Paul. Tyler. Bob. Marv. Sean, and who else is there? Do you want to unmute?
Gloria.
What was it?
Gloria.
Gloria?
Yes.
Welcome. Karen? Yeah. Gaffel? Yeah. Chris? Drew? Sabrina? And Dan? And Zendo? Susan? And Coral? Carson? Franklin? Erica? Rich. And yeah. So I tried to get as wide angle a camera as I could, but you still can't see the whole Zendo, but you know, not everything's perfect. Let's see. In terms of announcements, we have a one-day retreat, not this Saturday, but a week from Saturday. So that's November 13th. And it'll have an in-person as well as an online component. So go to the website and check that out. There's a schedule posted. Part-time participation is welcome. And if you're going to participate in the Zendo, you need to register. But online registration is optional, but you might want to register just, you know, so that we know what you're attending. So that's a very sweet day to spend together. You know, it starts late enough in the day, you can have had breakfast and coffee, and ends early enough in the day that you can go home for dinner. So, any other announcements or other questions about any of that stuff? We definitely are in need of volunteers for the Zendo, for opening and closing, and as I just mentioned, a Zoom tech would be great to just be there fussing with the audio and whatever. And then on Zoom, there are Zoom hosts, which like Paul was a Zoom host tonight, and there's a Zoom greeter, stuff like that. So if you are part of our Zoom Sangha, you have volunteer roles you can do. Okay. So tonight is part of a class series on the nine fields of Zen practice. This is a way to systematize and describe practice that I came up with, and it's described on my Zen Studies podcast website. So there's links on the Right Way Zen website to that, and under, I think it's under references or resources, there's a nine fields of Zen practice, and there's a page, and it's also a PDF on that page that you can print out of it. And if you want to listen to any of the previous classes, they've been recorded and they are on the Right Way Zen website. So check that out. And then tonight we are on the first, so there's three different categories. The first was wisdom. That was Zazen Dharma study and cultivating insight. The second was compassion. So it's precepts and opening the heart and cultivating connection with the ineffable, that which is greater. So this is now going to the last three, which are the skillfulness. So these are three. If Zen is a stool, it has three legs, it's wisdom, compassion, and skillful means. So this is the skillful means part. They all overlap, but so this is on my list. I used to call it Yoho, according with the Dharma in everyday life. And that's definitely still included, but I've rewritten this one field. So hopefully I haven't upset anyone who's gotten used to the nine fields as they were. But I realized we needed to talk about mindfulness. And Yoho, which I'll talk about tonight, is really like a particular Zen manifestation of mindfulness practice. But our practice of mindfulness goes beyond just that. So I will explain. So mindfulness, paying attention no matter what. And then the next class will be on karma work, working with our personal karma and habit energy and trying to clean up our act this lifetime. And then the last one is bodhisattva activity. So paying attention no matter what. So what I wanted to do was, go ahead, Chris.
I apologize, but I'm getting really strange audio. It sounds like it's picking up from both cameras or something, and it's kind of hard to hear. Maybe it's, I don't think it's me that, I mean, I maybe it's me, just me. Is anybody else having experience?
It's the same for me. It's very echoey.
Okay.
And it's hard to follow.
Let me see what I can adjust.
I wonder if you mute the Zendo feed.
The Zendo feed is not doing the audio. But
oh, weird.
All right, how is that? Oh, that's why.
For us, there's like background noise, but your voice does seem more loud and clear, even though there's background.
Can you hear me at all?
Yes.
This is the sound through the webcam, which is totally lame. I cannot get it to recognize the good microphone.
And we can hear your voice a lot better, but it kind of sounds like you're in a bit of a wind tunnel in the background.
Yeah.
But we can hear you much better. Oh, it's kind of dissipating.
You can hear you. Is this going to be okay?
This is much better for much hearing better. You.
I don't know what you did.
Sounds good this right is... now.
Oh, okay. Now. Okay. Now the Yeti mic is on and we're not using our fancy mixer, which is supposed to pick up Zendo sound and solve all of our problems. So I just went low tech and here we go.
It's great low tech.
We love
it. Oh God.
It's the best.
Zen's low tech. They just knew.
Well, the thing is now if anybody says anything in the Zendo, you're not going to be able to hear them. So we'll figure it out. Okay, but now at least everybody can hear me. Yay! All right. Cool. All right. So what I wanted to do first was do a brief breakout room, and Zendo will just divide into two groups and talk about what does mindfulness mean to you? This is a surprisingly elusive, you know, we talk about it all the time. If you're new and you have no idea what we mean by mindfulness, that's fine. In your breakout room, just say, I don't know what you mean by mindfulness. That's fine. So let's see. I will. So, I mean, what does mindfulness mean to you and why does it matter? And I'm figuring three people per breakout room, Paul. So not including either this Zoom or the Zendo Zoom. Can you do that? So what do you think mindfulness is? What does it mean to you and why is it important? And we'll do it for 15 minutes. We'll come back at 8:30. But before I started blathering on about what I think mindfulness is and, you know, whatever, I wanted to just explore that a little bit. Are you good to go, Paul? So you guys could, I don't know, Coral and Carson, you might want to split up. I don't know. Those who are together might want to split up. So I guess, you know, three people over there, four people over there. Do you want me to try to do it, Paul? Okay. I'm going to close all the rooms and I'm going to recreate. And oh, I see what you mean. If you can't do it automatically and exclude the. You guys can go ahead. You can. All right. I'll give it a shot.
Do you want me to do it?
You can just plop them into rooms, but they won't accept, so it won't go.
Okay, let me just. I got one adjustment to make, and then we'll be ready to go. Okay, here we go.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hi, Gathel. Hi, Karen. Hi, Drew. I think Ruth Ann is in there, too.
Yep. Well, I'll just jump in and tell you what I think mindfulness is. To me, it's staying intensely focused on what you are currently doing and not worrying about the past or the future. It's just really staying directly focused on the present. It's kind of impossible for me, but sometimes when I'm able to, it just feels like this, like you're kind of in the zone. It just feels great.
I think all human beings can
pay attention when they're in trouble. If someone breaks into your house and your life might be in danger, you're mindful. Or if a loved one's in trouble and you're in the ER, you're paying attention. So that's 100%. And I think we do that because it comes down to survival and our full capacity to participate. Thanks.
So I'd say it's pretty much what Karen said. It's paying attention, but I would also add that going along with that is intentionality. So like you're not only are you paying attention, but you're also acting with intention.
To me, it's a level of awareness, being awareness of where you are, what you're doing, what's around you. In part, being observant. It's also being aware of your own behavior. Can be mindful simply doing nothing. If you are aware of the things that are going around, going on about you.
Bob, any thoughts?
Well, Karen's muted. Am I muted? No, you aren't. Oh, okay. Karen was talking, but she's muted. Okay. My take on it is that mindfulness is being aware of the mental chatter, the information streams that are going on inside my brain, having excluded and silenced the external stimuli, both visual and auditory, so that the thoughts that are streaming through my head at any one time can be addressed or allowed to quiet. And that's the kind of mindfulness that I practice. Are we supposed to ask why it matters, or is that the next section?
That not was sure. Part of it. Yeah, she did say that.
Why it matters?
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure that I can answer why it matters. It's just what I do. Someday I might get to the point.
So that, you know, life doesn't say so that life doesn't just pass you by, right? So, I mean, if you're not paying attention, then, you know, it'll all be over and you'll have no idea what happened.
Yeah, I guess the alternative is to be locked in your own delusional self-dialogue.
Well, if you're mindful, you're fully involved. So you might be needing to make some action. As I said, to me, it's about your life, so it could be survival or at least participation.
I've just found that in times of extreme stress, when I'm worrying, you know, futurizing about something or rehashing the past over and over, when I do just focus on, you know, what I am doing at this very moment, you know, and the classic is, you know, if you're washing the dishes, just focus on washing the dishes or chopping up the carrots or whatever. If you just really focus on what I'm doing at that present moment, everything else falls away. And so for me, it's just really like emotionally rejuvenating or calming. It's kind of like a break from where my brain wants to go. But I think you're spot on, Ruthie Ann, with when there is a true crisis, you know, you really are focused on just what needs to be done at that in every second, you know. But that's a pretty intense way to live your whole life.
Oh, no, people can't. But I'm just saying, as an example of mindfulness, but when a friend calls to tell you that another friend maybe has some circumstance that we could call a crisis, I want to be mindful that whatever I say is active listening and perhaps the best comment to make for the person I'm talking to, or just to be listening. And it's not my crisis, but it's no human beings can't live in crisis. But when we look back on times where we were totally 100% mindful, sometimes in hindsight we realize we were making the best calls. Even if it was just listening to a doctor or just being calm ourselves when someone else had no good intentions. So being calm doesn't mean, you know, that we're in crisis. It just means we're 100% there.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not always a crisis. It can be a very joyful time too, just when you're fully participating. Mm-hmm. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like sometimes in a group choir when the score is so tricky.
That you have to focus, yeah.
Well, when you feel the whole community, and I'm thinking of a particular song where you jump up a whole octave, and a few times when you think, oh, it worked, you know, it's just that that joy, as you said, and that you felt it with the whole group, because that's what a choir is.
Yeah, I kind of call those moments being in the zone, because it just feels really good.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, right. That's what we ride on sometimes.
All right. Anyone want to share anything interesting that you heard or found yourself sharing? I hope we got the mindfulness juices flowing again. Let's see. Let me pull up something here that I wanted to share. Even though it's not a Buddhist thing, when I saw this, it just stuck with me. I think this is such a great description of mindfulness. So I will I will share my screen. I want to open this in YouTube, but I probably can't. So I will just share. Yeah, do you want to close that window that's in the way? Thank you. Oops, what happened? There we go. Play.
You may have heard this word mindfulness. It's become something of a buzz phrase of late. But I'm going to give you one simple, serviceable definition, which is that mindfulness is the ability to know what's happening in your head at any given moment without getting carried away by it. Imagine how useful this would be. Just as an example, driving down the road and something cuts you off the track. How do you normally react? I think most of us can normally react by having a thought, which is, I'm pissed. And then what happens next? You immediately, habitually, reflexively inhabit that thought. You actually become pissed. There's no buffer between the stimulus and your reaction. With just a little bit of mindfulness, in that same situation, you might notice my chest is buzzing, my ears are turning red, I'm having a starburst of self-righteous thoughts, I'm getting angry. But you don't necessarily have to act on it and chase that person down the road, screaming at them with your kids in the back of the car, thinking you've done enough. Now, you might be thinking, don't I need to get angry sometimes? Aren't I justified? I would say yes, but probably not as much as you think. The proposition here is not that you should be rendered by mindfulness into some lifeless, non-judgmental blob. The proposition is that you should learn how to respond wisely to things that happen to you, rather than just reacting blindly. And that, my friend, is a superpower. How do you get it? The way to get it is through meditation. I believe that meditation and mindfulness are the next big public health revolution. In the 1940s, if you told somebody you were going running, they would have said, who's chasing you? But then what happened next? The scientists looked in, they showed that physical exercise is really good for you, and now all of us do it. And if we don't, we feel guilty about it. And that's where I think we're headed with mindfulness and meditation. It's going to join the pantheon of no-brainers like brushing your teeth, eating well, and taking the meds your doctor prescribed for you. Let me just close by saying, mindfulness is not going to solve all of your problems. It's not going to render your life a nonstop parade of but this is a superpower, and one that is accessible by you.
So, in a way, it's very simple. So, let's see, I have 4 points to make tonight. And one is mindfulness just means seeing, being aware of what's really going on. so we can make enlightened choices. But it's one way to describe it. The second is there's no limit to what we can and should cultivate mindfulness of. The third is the practice of mindfulness, just like our Zazen, can be approached as a directed effort practice or as a letting go practice. And then finally, mindfulness enacted as Nyoho, so I'll mention something about that Zen manifestation of this, can also open our hearts and result in humility and gratitude. So mindfulness means seeing, being aware of what's really going on. We want our choices to be informed by reality instead of being carried along by negative self-centered habit energy or delusions or going on autopilot. We want, you know, fresh, real information, as clear as we can get it. So this faculty, this practice featured large in the Buddha's original teachings, and it was called sati. And Tanisaro Bhikkhu says the term sati is related to the verb sarati, to remember or to keep in mind. So the role of mindfulness, he says, is to keep the mind properly focused in frames of reference that will give it guidance on what present events to develop and which ones to abandon so as to stay on the path. So this is to be able to keep in mind the things that should be kept in mind. So my analogy is you've got a pair of binoculars. You're bird watching, or you're watching, you know, something from afar, and you want to figure out what's going on. You want to understand the behavior of this bird or whatever. So you have your binoculars, and the binoculars is like keeping the what you're wanting to pay attention to in your mind is like, you know, holding the binoculars on it. And, you know, many of us find that, you know, what we tend to do, even if we have an intention of paying attention to something, is like, you know, looking all over, or we forget even to look through the binoculars or whatever. So it's just this ability to just, you know, put your awareness on what it is that you want to pay attention to. And it's only one element of what's needed in our meditation and in our practice. So other things that we need are diligence and determination. Like, I am going to study this thing. I'm going to, you know, stick at it. I am going to, you know, my arms are getting tired, but I'm going to hold these binoculars up. You know, there has to be some energy. We have to, you know, have ethical behavior so that our lives aren't a mess, and we even have the opportunity to take some time to use our binoculars. Some measure of concentration. Concentration might be analogous to, like, you know, being able to bring some object into focus. And discernment. You know, there's, okay, we've got it in the view, but then there's a process of also, you know, what is going on there? Maybe get a different view on it. So this is just one aspect of our practice, but it is seen as like, if you don't have the mindfulness, none of the other stuff really helps. If you don't have the right thing in view, you know, the diligence, whatever, the focus, if you're just focusing on the wrong thing, like our default mode of self-referential thinking, that's not actually what's helpful. If we're just fantasizing about TV programs or, you know, what we might want to buy or something like that, that's not, that's, you know, our binoculars are way off on the, on a not very helpful frame. So, and this awareness, as many people are aware, this awareness of things in and of themselves, to try to refrain from judgment. You know, the video said try to not get all caught up in it, just notice. So, you know, ordinarily we are angry, but just a little bit of mindfulness involved can say, feelings of anger are arising in me. You know, there, it's a, you essentially recognize that this is not, you're not totally absorbed in the thing. You're recognizing this is something that's going on. And even just that can be very helpful and liberative. And also we refrain from judgment and interpretation and all that, because essentially doing that means we don't, generally means we don't see clearly. If the second, okay, I, you know, anger is arising in me and I think that's bad, I shouldn't do that, if I don't, you know, then we're muddying the waters immediately instead of just really seeing clearly what's going on. So we start this practice with, you know, the simplest form of mindfulness is really awareness of our physical sensations, of our body posture, of our breathing, just practicing, learning how to focus our awareness on that. And that's something that we can do at any time. You know, even when we're in the middle of the day, middle of tasks, we can just take a few breaths, and that can be very centering and helpful. And then according to the classic Buddhist process, then you become aware of your feelings, like, dislike, and neutrality, the very basic feelings. And then mind states, and then more elaborate stuff, like the hindrances and stuff. So this is where I get to that second point, where there's no limit to what we can and should cultivate mindfulness of. Now, in modern kind of secular mindfulness-based stress reduction and stuff, which is great, a lot of it is really focused on the body and body scans and breath and stuff like that. And that is great. It has great utility. But that's not in Buddhism. That's just one aspect of mindfulness. So we can be mindful of our physical experience, walking, sitting, standing, lying down, exercising, eating, you know, the sensations, the experience. We can be mindful of emotions, reactions, motivations, desires as we go about our daily lives. We can be mindful. It's tough to be mindful while you're talking. It is. That's the hardest, like probably the hardest time. But theoretically, we can be mindful while working, driving, while relaxing and having a cup of tea, while facing challenging circumstances. And then when we use this tool more, we can become mindful of patterns of behavior that we have, cause and effect over time. When I acted like this, this happened. When I acted like that, that happened. So this is like you're keeping that scenario, you know, in your field of reference long enough that you get to see what actually happens. You can become mindful of karmic obstacles, the arising of the hindrances, desire, ill will, sloth, restlessness, and doubt. These are things that the Buddha said is very helpful to be able to recognize when these things are arising in you. And then there's about seven factors of enlightenment. It's useful to learn how to recognize as well. Mindfulness itself, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So we become mindful of these things as well. And then, of course, things like the arising and cessation of dukkha. So you can see where this field of mindfulness, you know, just totally overlaps with the cultivating insight field, which we're trying to become aware of these things in our own, through our own experience. And without the tool of mindfulness, we wouldn't be able to make much progress there. So in terms of the, you know, when you're actually trying to practice mindfulness, I know that when I first encountered Buddhism and Zen, I thought mindfulness was like, that was a very radical suggestion, that I actually pay attention even when, you know, it isn't like exciting or entertaining or something that I might ordinarily pay attention to. I pay attention while washing the dishes, or pay attention while just taking a walk, and instead of just thinking about stuff. So I was intrigued, and I was surprised at how what a difference it made, my difference in relationship to my life. Like, oh, I can actually enjoy washing the dishes as opposed to just, it's just this thing to get done and go do something interesting. It's, you know, the warmth of the water on your hands and da da da. And there's all different kinds of mindfulness tools in Buddhism. So there's, you know, verses that you might say throughout the day at different times before you eat, or, you know, before you brush your teeth, or there's these, you know, just to remind you to pay attention to whatever it is you're doing. There's a book by Chosen Bays called How to Tame a Wild Elephant that has a lot of interesting different suggestions. Various ones. There's something like when you're passing, you know, you pick different exercises to concentrate on for a while. You know, one is something that you do when you pass through doorways, or something that you do before you pick up a phone. So you kind of mix these things into your day. And the idea, I mean, now these exercises can, if they work for you, that's great. The classic vision in Buddhism was that your mind is like a wild elephant and you need to tame your mind. And apparently, I don't know this for myself, but apparently if you want to tame a wild elephant, now presumably you catch one that's not too big, and you tie it to a stake, and eventually it knows it can't get away and it's tamed. That sounds kind of brutal, actually, but anyway, the idea is that in your mind, you tie it to a stake, you tie it to a meditative object, or you tie it to, you know, I want to be mindful of the dishes. So then paying attention to the sensations of washing the dishes is the stake. And when your mind wanders away, you bring it back. And then over time, they say that your mind will be more tame. It will come back to these things. I, as I have confessed in many settings, I did not find that to be the case. I mean, maybe a little bit at the beginning, there was some change, but it's like I hit a plateau. There was only so much. And it began to feel like, okay, my intention is to be mindful throughout the day. And I'm managing to do that for, you know, in little bits and pieces, maybe a total of 3 minutes. And the rest of the time, you know, it's just a habit energy, autopilot, wandering thoughts, whatever. And then, oh, okay, I'm mindful, I'm holding my tea, and I'm mindful for maybe 10 seconds, you know, and then my mind's away again. And so, I don't know. This can turn into a dualistic kind of struggle and a sense of either like, I'm not good at this. Well, you know, I like Buddhism and, for, you know, it's helped me reduce stress, but I'm really not very good at it. Or I'm just not trying hard enough. I'll just keep trying this thing over and over and over and maybe I'll get some different results. And, you know, that kind of approach, for some people, that's, I envy them, but that works very well. So if that kind of direct approach works, that's great. But the same way that I've talked about the different ways that we can approach our zazen, in shikantaza being, instead of it being a directed effort practice, a concentration practice, we make it into a letting go practice, a very natural, holistic kind of thing, where we really are trying to avoid dividing ourselves into parts. I am trying to be mindful. There's my unruly mind. I guess I think of it as, you know, rather than tying the elephant to a stake, we sit down in the forest and we just be still and let the elephant like approach us closer and closer and tame it gradually that way. Is it faster? Probably not. Is it more effective? I don't know, but it's, you know, for some that's the more natural way. So when we apply this kind of letting go, naturalness to mindfulness. Each person might have a different way that they want to frame this. But the way that I find helpful is to think of being undivided. So at any given moment when I'm, you know, going about my day, when I'm walking in Winco Foods, and, you know, I recognize like I'm scattered. You know, my body's walking down the aisle at Winco Foods. My mind is thinking about what's going to happen next. And, you know, all of this stuff is going on. And what do I want to be, you know, whole. So it's not one part warring against another. It's just kind of to be undivided. And, you know, there might be other ways that you can find a phrase that be here now, or probably all similar things to what we use to bring ourselves, you know, make ourselves willing to sit zazen. Just something that doesn't create dualism, but inspires you to be right there. And to, it seems crazy, but essentially this works primarily if we completely wipe the slate clean and do not be concerned whatsoever about what kind of progress we're making. Never adding up like how many minutes we think we have been mindful that day. All of that just creates more of this struggle and dualism. So, I mean, it seems like if you just gave up trying to do that kind of calculation, that then, you know, you would utterly fail and never be mindful, but that's just not the case. I don't know that you're going to be a whole lot, like it's going to be a miraculous change and suddenly, you know, you're present and undivided all the time, but it's not going to be worse. It's definitely not going to be worse. And there won't be that sense of struggle. So, yeah, undivided. And this is something that we can do just instantly. It's not, if we think about it too much in a way, we chase it away. And then just briefly, I wanted to say something about the Zen practice of Myoho. So this previously that stood for this whole category. Myoho is that term is not typically used in the way that I'm using it. It's usually used for a particular kind of sewing practice or monastic practice. But I'm applying it more widely, because what it means is basically rules and rituals and like ways that you do things in very mundane aspects of your life. So is how you brush your teeth, or you treat your toothbrush, or you fold your clothes, or you, you know, cook your meals and you wash your dishes and you put them away, and the idea being that there's no thing that is beneath our attention. So it's really challenging that idea that we usually walk around with, which is just, it's all self-referential. Is this exciting? Is this interesting? Is this advantageous? Otherwise, you know, no, I don't really need to, you know, anything that's cheap or that is easy to come by or something, we just don't treat it with that kind of care. Like if something was really valuable and precious, then we'd, oh, you know, have this attention and this care. So the idea is that we treat everything that way. And apparently, one of my favorite stories about this is in a Japanese women's monastery, if you treat something roughly, even like a zafu, a sitting cushion, like another nun might say, ouch. So this is a very beautiful and inspiring way to practice this mindfulness. So I feel like it's a, you know, it's just another take on this. So maybe instead of doing gathas throughout the day, or, you know, this kind of disciplined mindfulness, more of this sense of, you know, trying to take care of each thing, or each person that we, you know, if we're going to take care of objects, then we're definitely going to try to take care of the people that we encounter. So. I will leave it there. We have 7 minutes. If anybody says something in the Zendo, I will repeat it so those of you on Zoom can hear. Those of you on Zoom, if you want to raise your hand electronically using the reactions button, or you just want to do it old-fashioned way or unmute yourself. Dave.
Hello. So when I hear people talking about mindfulness in this, in sort of the more secular way, something that occurs to me, and I don't know what your thoughts might be on this, is that mindfulness by itself, I don't know if mindfulness by itself, unhinged from precepts, necessarily leads to good places. Yeah, I don't, one could, I think, can't one be mindful of being angry, but rather than using that to release anger, you just sort of dwell in ill will and anger, and just kind of just be aware that you're doing it, you know, or be mindful of somebody that you're speaking to in order to kind of read them better, in order to manipulate them to do something that they don't want to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And this is one of the points that Tanisiro Biku makes a lot. He's an opinionated scholar. He's like, it's not just mindful. What are you being mindful of? Like, so he talks about mindfulness being okay if you're driving along a road, like you're trying to be mindful of the road so you get where you need to go. So if you were mindful of like, whoa, look at that cloud, I mean, then that's not helpful. So it has a purpose. I mean, I think at a certain level that initial, physical mindfulness, maybe very neutral kind of mindfulness of your feelings and can help you be detached from your feelings or something. But yeah, if it's not in a larger context of what it is that you're trying to do, I don't know. I guess it depends. I don't know how harmful it is. I mean, if all you watched was that YouTube video, that probably helped most people. But yeah, I mean, if you weren't trying to live a wiser and more compassionate life, if you didn't have any kind of ethical principles, then mindfulness isn't going to make you a nicer person.
Said that.
Yeah, go ahead and speak up, because I'm hoping that this will catch.
At this point, I think it could actually make you a better, a more cunning, bad guy. use your powers for evil as opposed to good.
Yeah, mindfulness could make you a more cunning bad guy.
Yeah.
Although, we do have this sense. I guess I have a trust that if somebody really was practicing mindfulness, then they would start to notice the repercussions of their actions. And they would start to notice that when they treated somebody with cruelty, unless they're a sociopath, but normal people, I think you would recognize, actually, that doesn't feel good when I treat people that way. And
I had a question. I'm not sure if I can put it in words exactly, but I'll try anyway. You kind of expanded in some ways the definition of mindfulness beyond, I guess, what we might think of commonly, like just kind of presence in the moment here and now. I got a sense that there's levels of mindfulness almost in a way, and I'm not describing that very well, but what came to mind is this idea of, like, for me recently, there was a situation where there was some conflict and I was mindful at the time, and there was enough of a kind of karmic disturbance that there was unresolved things about it, right? And so I can see where mindfulness could be applied to that whole process of figuring out what to do, but at the same time, it seems like a subtle line between rumination and mindfulness. And And I know that's maybe not really a question, but it's something that came to mind and something I'm like trying to put in the context of, because you know, I have feelings around this conflict, but I have conflicting feelings. There's a lot of different things going on, and how to apply mindfulness without getting into the sort of ruminative kind of traps.
So could anybody hear what he was saying?
Good luck in reframing that.
Yeah? Oh, cool. They could actually hear you. So rumination versus mindfulness. That's a good question. I guess for me, it's what springs to mind is that mindfulness is about what's happening right now. But sometimes we can explore situations like you're talking about. You know, maybe like we didn't quite have time to be mindful in the moment, and we would like to turn the lens of mindfulness on this thing. So I guess I find that there's this way that you can recall the situation, and I don't know, just you're just kind of observing it. Even though you're calling it up in memory, it's like you're just observing it with that neutral, non-reactive mindfulness. Like what right now, as I recall that, what happens inside? Like what emotions come up, what thoughts come up, what inhibition? I'm like, oh, you know, and it's because that's what's arising in the, we can be mindful of what the memory of it causes to happen in us
yeah.
in the present. And then
yeah,
we go,
that's
huh,
exactly what
look at that, you know, and sometimes it'll just be like, huh, I actually feel really sad and insecure in front of that person, or sometimes something will become more obvious if we tend that lens like that. But it isn't like, yeah, once we get into the intellectualizing, it's not that there's not a time and a place for that, but let's see, we are at 9:01. So if people need to log off, but I will take one more from Michael.
Hi, Domio.
Hello.
Hey, I wonder if this is in line with mindfulness. And I heard the gentleman speaking just now, and he said something about, you know, it helping him in conflict with others, you know. And I remember reading a book a few years ago, and I forgot the name of the psychologist, but it's called Nonviolent Communication. And in a nutshell, it's about kind of like recognizing where the other person is coming from, with whom you're having it's used mainly in conflict resolution, and being kind of mindful of their feelings, but also sharing your feelings. And I've used this for, you know, conflicts I've come in contact with where, you know, I'll just say, well, you know, I saw this and it made me feel this, and I see that you're feeling this. And I found that that's been very like helpful for me, especially in my profession. When I have a student that's about to flip their lid or something like that, you kind of recognize each other's humanity. We have feelings, and this is where I'm coming from. Where are you coming from? In other words, you know, so is that kind of in line with mindfulness, or is that something different?
I would say, you know, mindfulness, like I said, is just one tool. Mm-hmm. And we need lots of tools. But I could see mindfulness being a tool that you use in nonviolent communication, because if you aren't capable of, all right, you know, how am I feeling? Or, you know, what did you do? Or you like, especially that kind of observation that nonviolent communication requires, where like, I need to be able to say what you did, like in an objective way, not you were mean, right? Mm-hmm. And mindfulness is exactly that kind of, you cultivate that ability to just see things clearly. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for being here. I will close with a verse. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Right?
you, everyone.
Thank you.